mixed by WPFW alum DJ Two Tone Jones. Saturday, September 20th at Skyland Town Center with the screening of Berry Gordy's The Last Dragon. Then on Saturday, October 25th, the series concludes with the screening of I'm Gonna Get You Sucker at the Capitol Hill Boys Club Artist Gallery. Each event begins at 7 p.m. with a guest DJ set, followed by the movie at 8:30 p.m. Blankets and lawn chairs are welcome. For more details, visit shaolinjazz.com. shaolinjazz.com.
I'm Kamaya.
I'm Amira.
I'm Kaya.
I'm Kamaya.
And you're listening to WPFW Washington.
Another man done gone. Another man done gone from the county farm. Another man done gone.
Huh? I don't know. What? I'm just going across the street. Like that.
Shut your mouth.
Oh, no. What'd I do?
Turn around. Put your hands behind your back. Let's go.
The jury of your peers, having found you guilty, 10 years.
What? Come on. Get in that cell.
I was in jail, too, man. It's cold-blooded in the jail. You go down there looking for justice. That's what you find. Just us.
Welcome to another edition of Crossroads Today. Now, here's your host, Roach Brown.
Good morning, and thank you for tuning in to Crossroads. We've been coming to you, as I talked to my wife. We've been on the air for 17 years, and in that 17-year time, we missed 4 days in 17 years. And it's been a pleasure and honor to come to you and bring you these topics and shows. And our show deals with those people impacted by the criminal justice system. That includes those inside, those outside, families and friends of those people who've been impacted by the criminal justice system. So every topic we bring to you has that kind of wide range in terms of reaching folk who've been impacted or affected by the criminal justice system. As usual, we open up at what we call the grapevine, information that you can use, the grapevine. Hey, federal cuts disrupt local justice programs, but communities push forward. Programs that combat violence and support victims are thrown into chaos after the Trump administration weaponized funding for its political goals. Moms on a Mission is a group that supports mothers who lost children to violent crimes in Louisiana. Nicole Scott was driving when the call came. It was supposed to be good news. 4 months earlier, her small nonprofit, the Bridge Agency, was awarded a federal grant to expand programming to reduce violence in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Recognition and finally for a decade of grassroots work keeping black youth out of jail, away from violence and in school. But the voice on the other end was not calling to celebrate. The money was gone. The grant had been canceled. The Baton Rouge nonprofit was one of the more than 500 organizations impacted when the Department of Justice abruptly terminated hundreds of grants in late April. This pulled the plug on an estimated $500 million in outstanding funds administered by the Department's Office of Justice Programs. An analysis by the Council on Criminal Justice found DOJ funding under the second Trump administration now serves the president's agenda of mass deportation and a law and order approach to reducing crime. The DOJ terminated $5 million in outstanding funds to Vera, who for 64 years has run on a platform of criminal justice reform achieved by research. Then the nonprofit had unwavering support from the federal government in the past. Now Vera is among those organizations that sued to reinstate the funding. The Justice Department told grant recipients that were terminated that their work no longer effectuates the program goals or agency's priorities. A termination letter reviewed by the Marshall Project said the department was focusing on direct support and coordination for law enforcement, combating violent crimes, protecting American children, and supporting victims of trafficking and sexual assault, We were also victims of this termination. My wife and I, we had a couple grants, and our grants were terminated. And we had one day to release all our folks. So this termination of these nonviolent justice intervention programs and grants is being terminated all across the country. And it hit us hard, too. So hang in there, everybody. How Trump's Medicaid cuts will slash health coverage for people leaving prison. The massive cuts will hit the formerly incarcerated hard, and that could increase crime, experts warn. Over the past 15 years, formerly incarcerated people have greatly benefited from expansions to Medicaid health care coverage. Those gains are now at risk in the face of an estimated $1 trillion in federal spending cuts outlined in the president's One Big Beautiful Bill. Experts who spoke to the Marshall Project warned that the law's coverage would lead to unnecessary deaths all across the country. And that's been an update. Let me give you this last one. A few weeks ago, we had Reverend Willie Wilson here on Crossroads, and we were talking about the 2025 Million Man March Revival and UniFest from September 22nd to Saturday, September 18th. That's 5 days of activities over at Union Temple. They're talking about reviving the spirit of the historic Million Man March and the beloved UniFest, which was held over 20, 25 years over in Anacostia. Somebody's doing something. Reverend Wilson is doing something, and a lot of other folks are joining him. So if you want to be a part of what's going on, we're trying to bring back the revive the spirit of the Million Man March and the beloved UniFest. Folks are doing something over Ward 8 in far southeast. So if you want to get involved, every Monday evening at 7 o'clock, there's a Zoom for people and organizations and entities and vendors who want to get involved. The phone number to call is 202-678-8822. 202-678-8822. Give them a call and join this 5-6 day event of bringing attention to reviving the Million Man March and the UniFest, but also about what's going on in our city with the takeover and what you can do as a citizen, as a nonprofit, as a religious person, or whatever your title may be. Please call that number and join the Zoom meeting every Monday at 7 o'clock. 202-678-8822. And that's been what we call the grapevine, information that you can use. Now we get to our topic of today's show. We have two outstanding gentlemen, both of whom are medical doctors. And our topic this morning is Black youth suicide is on the rise. Our young people are killing themselves in alarming rates. Besides the shooting and the carjackers in the street, that's one way that we're seeing the effects of poverty and crime. But here's another way that our young people are taking their own lives. While Black people historically had lower suicide rates than white people, a growing crisis is driven by alarming increases among Black youth and young men. Suicides among Black youth are now rising faster than any other racial or ethnic group. Systemic inequities in mental health care, along with societal risk factors like racism and poverty, are key drivers of this trend. And joining us this morning are two doctors. One is Dr. William Lawson, MD, psychiatrist, Department of Health and Human Services, and Dr. Morgan Fagot. See, I got you, Lawson, and I tricked you with that one, didn't I? Howard University School of Medicine. Good morning, Dr. Lawson and Dr. Fagot. How you gentlemen doing this morning?
Very well, sir. Just want to make a full disclosure. I'm no longer directly related to the Department of Behavioral Health. I'm now independent with my own institute, ReducingDisparities.com, as well as a professor at George Washington University.
Oh, thank you. And good morning, Dr. Fagot. I'm calling you Fagot because I don't want to call it. You understand what I'm saying that, sir.
Yeah. Hey, peace and blessings to you, my brother.
Thank you.
Man, thank you for coming to people's church before. We look forward to having you back.
I'd be glad to come back. I always have enjoyed myself at people's church. Thank you.
Great.
Our topic is Black youth suicide is on the rise. How do we prevent this, to both of you gentlemen. What's causing black suicide for our youth to take their own lives? Start with you, Dr. Lawson, then we go with Dr. Forgot.
Well, first, I've long disputed this idea that the suicide rate is on the rise. I was taught in school, and a lot of us were taught that black folks didn't kill themselves. I was told that when I was growing up.
I heard that too.
And if you look at, if you look historically, I mean, back during slavery times, we were killing ourselves, and we're still doing it. So how do you label us killing ourselves? There's no doubt that many of us are being killed either by suicide, by drug overdose, and others, but they often aren't listed as suicides. So it's not to say that this is a new problem. It's an old problem that has not been adequately addressed because of the stigma around suicide, the whole impact of our religious community in terms of failure to recognize suicide, and also this whole idea that somehow we are able to survive the present world and the present problems because we're resilient is inconsistent.
Recording.
That too many of our young people are in
recording stop.
You look just after COVID, when you had rises in suicide and homicide.
Recording in progress.
They're probably related to the same phenomena. And that is, as you said, the disparities that exist in our communities, institutional racism, limited resources, and so on.
Okay, Dr. Forgot, how do you... go ahead, you got it.
Yeah, I fully agree with Dr. Lawson. And again, the suicide among children is different from adults. And again, Dr. Lawson is a world expert in terms of adult depression in Black America. But in terms of children, you'll find that it's really age-related. In fact, suicide rates have been rising nationally. You know, you had 49,000 deaths in 2022, and it was about, back in 2011, the rate was about 5.5 per 100,000, and in then it rose all the way up to 8.7 in 2021. And it's interesting, though, white Americans remain higher overall, and indeed, firearms account for 55% of suicide nationally. From a pediatric point of view, we think that impaired school, family, and social adjustment gives a lot of child psychiatric disturbances. When I was working at Hillcrest, 80% of my children growing up in D.C. had PTSD evidence. And I think Dr. Lawson can confirm this. It's anywhere from 50 to 80% of patients seen in D.C., we'll have that. So it's right now, it's interesting. Back in 1988, the suicide rate was about 0.8, less than one per 100,000. Okay. And it rose all the way up to, again, that was among 10 to 14, very low in the children under 12. In 1978, the rate for 15 and 19 year olds was 7.6 per 100,000. Just to show you the difference between the younger child and older child. Very few suicides occur in children under 12. And in D.C., it's very hard to really get the data because any deaths in children under age 10 really. Had been reported to CFSA. We do not have the data in D.C. for suicides under age 10. It's going to you have to get a FOIA to get it. We do know
our kids. Let me interrupt. Our kids under 10 are committing suicide at 10 years old.
Yeah, they are very few. Very, as I said, but what we don't know how many in D.C. And the thing about it. D.C. has one of the lowest suicide rates in the U.S., 6.2 per 100,000 in 2021. Of that number, in 2021, 29 of the suicides were white, 18 were black, 8 Hispanic, and 3 Asian. Okay? In 2022, it had risen to 29 black, 21 white, 7 Asian. Isn't that interesting? There was an increase from 21 to 22. And in fact, now the black suicides exceeded white. And again, this is something Johnson and I can talk about. But what we need to know, the president of the NMA, Dr. Roger Mitchell, his really main focus is violence by gunshots, violence and death by shootings. And he has really announced an epidemic. He's the new president of the National Medical Association.
Yeah, I met him.
Right. But let me stop here. I just want to make sure I think that's just some initial. And I'd always start peace, blessing, and abundant love to you and your wife today.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
You're quite a gentleman. Thank you. We appreciate that, Dr. Fagat. What I'm concerned about is they said that black boys increasingly likely to attempt suicide. Black boys are more likely to attempt suicide than black girls. Why is black males always the target or the focal point? They said black youth with the killings and the shootings and the carjackings and the drug overdoses and the violence in the street. Now we're taking our own lives aside, besides taking each other's life. This is a phenomenon. Why would somebody 12, 13, 14 years old be that depressed to take their life? What has to happen for somebody to be in that frame of mind at that young age?
I think a lot of it has to do, I've been looking at some of the historical perspective of this. Part of it is the role of the African-American male in our society. And that is that historically, the African-American male have been looked at as a commodity, someone that was to produce things rather than as a human being. And as a result of this, we often look at the role of males in terms of if they're not productive, how can we get them to be more productive? Or if they are having problems, we look at it as a way of seeking a punitive approach rather than a therapeutic or supportive approach. Often we ignore the fact or we try to say that that African-American males do not have a mental life. Our young boys, our adults, we all have mental lives. We all have feelings. We all have depression. But when I look back and myself, Dr. Fagat, and some of our own work, and also Dr. Lee, found out that often depression, sadness, post-traumatic stress disorder is often not recognized by many of the people that should be supportive in the community. Or, as I mentioned earlier, ignored because males are supposed to be resilient, strong, and so forth. So if folks run into distress, rather than take it on themselves or internalize it, they externalize it and trying and acting out in ways that can be destructive.
And I just
want to mention one other point. After the COVID epidemic, as Dr. Fayette noted in terms of statistics, the drug overdose rate, homicide rate, and suicide rate all increase in lockstep with each other. And to me, that shows that the underlying factors for all of them is the same. That contributed to all of those problems, and some folks being reflected as suicide, others as drug overdose, and others as homicide. I may also refer to an old colleague of mine, Nathan Hare,
who I remember him.
My semi-marticide, that what we call homicide and what we call suicide are really reflections of the same underlying problems.
And that's a key point. What we really need to look at, as Dr. Roger Mitchell, president of NMA, tells us, in D.C., where you have black-on-black gunshot death. I think those that needs to be factored in. And one thing, as I said, there with the child 6 to 8 years old, one of the ways that they show their depression is sadness and helplessness. From 8 to 11, they might feel a little restless, unloved. I feel like they're being used unfairly by others. This is from Dr. Rutter and Herzog, adolescent psychiatry. Now, children over 11, has been reported in the literature, have some guilt feelings. They feel wicked, and they deserve to die because of their badness. And in some many instances, I had this when I was in Hillcrest. Some of my teenagers, 12, 14, 15 years old, want to be reunited with their deceased relative, loved one.
Wow.
Especially that, especially that grandmother. In our society, in D.C. now, so many grandmothers are raising these young men.
Yes.
And now we wonder why they got long hair. They're trying to look like grandmother. Okay? Because that grandmother loved them and raised them. Yeah. And, you know, wasn't it a tragedy to see this mother mourning the loss of a 20-year-old son? He went out to get her prescription filled and got shot. Okay.
Wow.
Okay. That's one of the, and again, the love that she showed for that young man when he was interviewed just emphasizes how close the bond is between these grandmothers and these young males.
Yes.
And if he had been suicidal, that young man would have been at risk. Okay.
Let me throw this in. Are there any signs? How can you detect signs of potential suicide victims? Is there any signs that you can look at or look to say, hey, we need to get him to a therapist and get some counseling?
And that's another key. The absence of therapists and mental health professionals is a key component to why these things are not recognized early. I'm sure Dr. Lawson will let us know, because in my patients at Hillcrest, you know, I was able to get them on proper, if they had ADHD or some other problems, or as I said, 80% of my patients were PTSD. And with Dr. Warren and some of the other psychiatrists' guidance, I was able to get them on proper medication and get them through that. If I, again, how many did I not see? That's the issue. So again, there are absolute signs, but with the child under 12, this is a difficult thing. Again, the task of adolescence is to resolve identity. What am I going to be? Between 12 and 14 is where we get a lot of my patients who chose to be transgender, or who recognize their love for same sex. My job as a pediatrician was to assure that this decision that they made was something that they wanted to live with and prepare them for that. Again, so many times the family, when a child comes out the closet, they reject them. And that's, that kind of rejection is what will give you. And then that I'm a grandfather of a transgender child. And, you know, we spent a lot of times getting the proper treatment and all that. His particular father was, you know, finally got reunited with his father. Now he is happy in his decision. He was Asia, now he's Matthew. So that's a whole nother issue in terms of, again, if they're transgender, going to school, and between the harassment from their peers, these, and I defer to Dr. Lawson and some of the psychodynamics of this, but I'm sure, so I defer to you on that, Dr. Lawson.
Go ahead, Doc.
I just want to emphasize one thing that Dr. Thagat's stating, that how do you recognize it? We have such a stigma against saying that I'm sad, I'm depressed, especially for young black boys. It's a sign of, looked at as a sign
of weakness. Yes.
Part of it is being open to listen, not just to your ears, but also observing. In terms of folks acting out, getting involved with what we would call antisocial behavior, sometimes misdiagnosed as attentional deficit disorder, sudden poor performance in school, failure to relate to their friends, isolating themselves, and seeking drugs of abuse. We find a lot of these sub-teens are now turning to street drugs as a way not of just having fun, but as a way of dealing with internal stresses that's impacted them. So a key point is, one is to be able to listen, and two is to just look at changes in behavior. That's because they said, they're not saying I'm sad, does not mean that they aren't sad deep inside and they are under distress.
And a good example is Chris Berry was my patient. And I remember Marion had me come over to the house because Chris had moved in, and yes. Marion couldn't even get into his own bedroom, okay? But, Chris, I had to put him in the hospital at Howard University one instance. He jumped off a roof after getting high on PCP.
Yes.
And, I had to, he then left the hospital AMA. I had to meet me at Starbucks. I'd take his IV out. That's another story. But I think this is a good example. Now, Marion, thank God he gave us the detox unit at DC Journal. And that's where I did my addiction medicine training as well as running the unit. But with these children, if you have a bipolar patient, that patient is at an increased rate, increased risk of suicide. And Dr. Lawson tells us about the MZ-D2-DZ ratio. But again, we find that those teenagers with endogenous depression respond to ECT and treatment, where those who have neurotic depression really respond to tricyclics. Well, hey, in some population, they're not even seeing a social worker or a peer counselor, okay? So they're not diagnosed, they don't get the treatment they need, and they self-medicate, as Dr. Lawson has correctly said. And we're talking K2, fentanyl, you name it. And again, in many instances, there's self-destructive behavior. As you know, when that addict finds, hears about one of his buddy dying, they run to see, where did he get that?
That's right. They're good stuff.
So, and those are some undiagnosed suicides of those folks trying to get that high that kill their buddy.
Yeah. You know, you said something earlier, Dr. Lawson. We came up with a name when I was away the last time. And in fact, when you mentioned Chris Berry, Dr. Forgot, Chris been on twice on that show just before he passed away. And we had him. We used to meet at Georgia Avenue and V at Wilson's Restaurant.
Oh,
Chris,
yeah.
And we used to sit there and talk with Chris, and we tried to work with him. And
right.
when he passed away, man, it ripped my heart out. I mean, the guy had a lot of potential. You
right.
know, and it's sad when you see a young person just lose a life. One of the things I was mentioning, Doctor, is that when I was away this last time, I come up with a program called PISS, Post-Incarcerated Stress Syndrome, PISS. In the same way you got PTSD when men and women come out of the military, the
right.
same thing affects men and women coming out of institution.
Absolutely.
It's called post-incarcerated stress syndrome.
Mm.
And you can have that. I'm not a doctor, not a psychiatrist, but it just came to me by putting the program together that these mental health problems affects people to the point where they may consider suicide. What is it that anybody can do if they got a loved one and they feel that they might be leaning towards that? What would you suggest they do? Is there a number to call? Is there a hotline to call to help reach for these youngsters to reach out to somebody?
First thing they got to do is hug that child. Put your arms around that child. And as Dr. Lawson says, actively listen to that child. It's amazing. You never know how much impact you have on a child as an interested adult just by listening or hugging them. Okay? But again, I defer to Dr. Lawson and some of the other psychiatric interventions.
Okay.
DC has what we call a 988 program. Rather than call 911, call 988 when you think something was going on. One of the things we found is that many times folks do let their professionals, let the parents and others know that things are out of control.
They give you a signal.
But they sit on it. They write it off. They say, we're tough. They say, man up. And the results, unfortunately, can be tremendously awful. And that is why it's important to be able to recognize that we, at least in the D.C. area, as Walter stated, that we do have some resources. Okay. The 988 system, the Department of Behavioral Health, 793-4357, other ways to call for help. We don't, a lot of times we don't want to let it out to family, but sometimes we have to bring in professionals from outside the family to deal with these issues.
Hey, Bill, we need to follow up on that post-incarcerated syndrome, and that to me is a very key area. So many, because the entire family is affected by that incarcerated person, okay? And the more that we can impact on that person, the better the children in that family can be identified and get the intervention they need early. So we need more about that post-incarcerated syndrome.
Post-incarcerated, but the ongoing incarcerated, and Walt, you've spent a lot of time working with youth in incarcerated settings. What we recognize that only about 17% of folks who have expressing mental health concerns in those settings actually get attended to or treated. There's so much focus on security and on punitiveness that we don't think about treatment, which in the long run can prevent folks from ending up in a revolving door in and out of those systems.
And one thing that's helped me, I'm an old retired colonel in the United States Army, 82nd Airborne Paratrooper, okay? And I know about discipline, okay? And my patients know when they come in my office, and hey, we get a kind. Hey, you're gonna do right if you're gonna deal with me. And so I think discipline is love. Discipline is love.
Yep. Yes, it is.
If you don't love somebody, you don't give them direction or guardrails. Okay.
Yeah.
Elon Musk is a good example of somebody with no discipline and no love. That's what can happen if you don't put some guardrails in early on.
You know, we've been working with returning citizens for the last 55 years, and Dr. Lawson and I, we've been meeting at Ben's Chili Bowl with time to all get involved, the whole collaboration of nonprofits. And as you said something earlier, Doc, to say that drug overdoses, homicides, and suicides. Right. Here's another one. There's a new word that's coming out. I don't know how we come up with this, called prison side. There's homicide, suicide, genocide, and prison side.
Wow.
You got men and women who are committing suicide by going back to prison because when they got released and they stand in the street and they see all the inequities, the unfairness, the injustices, they've been discriminated against, they've been marginalized, and they see no hope. And for a kid to be 12, 13, and 14 to see no hope in a country as rich as America, something must really be happening to make somebody be that depressed. So we're talking about prison side, that's another word that men who get locked up on purpose or intentionally. You're listening to WPFW 89.3 FM, your station for jazz and justice, here on the Pitt Pacifica Radio Network. We have one caller on. We're going to cut in and take our first caller. Somebody want to ask a question or talk to either one of my two distinguished doctors. Hello, you're on the air, please. Question or comment?
Hello, Roach. This is Rick calling from Germany.
I knew that would be you, Rick, from Germany. Boy, you don't miss a beat. Come on with it, Rick. We miss you.
I want to say to your two guests that I am a black male, about 59 years of age, struggling with suicide on a daily basis. I want to ask about the prison system. Young people are being given time in the prison system. They're stacking time against young people, charging them as an adult. And if a child, a male child, sees himself in prison, he's not affiliated with a gang, and he's not strong enough to defend himself. Suicide seems one option. What do you both say to this?
Well, let me say, I worked with the juvenile detention system, YSC, here in D.C., and you're quite right. The incarcerated youth, in fact, is interesting. There is a disparity. My experience in D.C. was most of my patients who were incarcerated were Black. White patients who juvenile delinquents usually got a call. The parents were called. They came and took them home.
Yeah, they go home.
Yeah.
So there would be an increased incidence of these children. And that's, again, we're talking 14 to 15-year-olds. At the very time that they're having their identity issues, then they are put in and become criminalized. And so this is thank you for this very important question, Rick. And in D.C., as we know, that there's a lot of, we had a lot of changes. We just now revamped the whole juvenile delivery system. So hopefully it's going to be better. Let me just stop here because I know Bill has done a lot with prison use as well.
Yeah, one of the sad things, and I think you hinted at it, is that some of the older prisoners, and I found in some of the folks in the correctional system, deliberately would target youth.
Right.
And
yes.
Sometimes encourage them, sometimes out of entertainment, to be able to encourage them to try to do themselves in. And then we were involved in Arkansas in terms of actually stopping the system. They would treat folks who were expressing suicidal thoughts, they would chain them to the wall. That was their idea of addressing suicide.
Oh,
and they often don't appreciate the fact that these are human beings, that folks will hope that folks will get out, and that we're not leaving a pathway for them to have a future or any hope. Our system is, again, so much focused on incarceration, restriction, and punishment, that it's not doing very much in terms of this whole concept of rehabilitation. And for young people, that is really a tragedy. Not just costly to our society and costly to our community.
You know, I've witnessed that firsthand when young kids commit suicide. It was juveniles, and they just said they're 13, 14. They had that identity crisis stage. They're trying to find out who they are, who they want to be, and they're trying to get their life together. And when you see a young kid, and you can look in his eyes, and the light has gone out in his eyes, they've been raped or assaulted by an older prisoner. That's one of the reasons why they keep them separated or try to keep them separated. But some of these kids, when you see a young kid, 14 to 15, commit suicide, it rips your heart out because you see it coming. You can see the loneliness. You can see the death inside of his eyes. You can see the spark go out in these youngsters. And there's nothing you can do. You call the officials and say, hey, they lock him up and put him in solitary. Chief Justice Earl Warren said something in 1962 that you were sent to prison as punishment, not to be punished, but somehow when you get these youngsters incarcerated in these facilities and the staff, because they got total authority, they abuse, manipulate, and violate these kids. And one of the saddest things to see a 13 or 14-year-old kid who have no hope, don't want to see tomorrow, don't have no family, and they take their own life, and you feel so sad, there's nothing you can do. So what is it that if you consider somebody or think somebody's going that way or leaning to it, what would you suggest to them, doctor? Hey, come here. When you said it first, doctor, I forgot. Hug them, squeeze them, love them. We walk down the street all the time, my wife and I, we see four or five kids on the corner, everybody cross over. We walk right to them. Hey, man, how y'all doing? What's happening? Give me 50 cents, one of you turkeys. You know, we do something to break the ice.
Yeah, and then, again, what you do then, when you connect, then that really, as I mentioned before, that adolescents feel guilty. And really, they view death differently. Adolescents see suicide as them removing a problem. They don't want to cause anybody any more problems. So they're just going to remove a problem, and they don't consider it. And they have an idea that death is not final. They say, oh, well, I'm going to do this to remove the problem. Everything's going to be, well, yeah, but you're dead. They miss that part of it. Once you do that, then you're gone.
We have another call on. Okay, we have another call on. Question or comment, please.
Hello?
You on the air. Yes.
Yeah, you got me?
We got you. Come on with it.
Okay. All right. My question, I'm going to try to be brief. I want to know if the doctor can expound upon the mental issues that's out here in society and the learned behavior, right? Is there any relevance or data that attach to the learned behavior and how our hip-hop culture or black culture is? And, I mean, I got the answer myself, but I believe entertainment, the programming, how the black community take in their culture is becoming a dynamic of what we see in the mental illness era. So again, the learned behavior is a pattern. All of these guys are acting aggressive and acting what I would see is and the women are calling them sassy. So these learned behaviors, of course, we know we got to acknowledge them and contribute them to the R&B culture, the hip hop culture, what we're taking in off of the internet, social media, and so forth. Where do we take the accountability to try to fix the problem from within and stop making this about political quests and stuff like that? This is within us,
okay.
As parents,
thank
uncles, and aunts, and everything.
Thank you. We'll let the doctors respond. Go ahead, Dr. Lawson.
I think you're absolutely right. Well, I think the key thing, I really want to emphasize the point you said, is learned behavior. It's not something that's genetic. It's not something that's inborn. It's learned behavior. And because it's learned, we can take steps early. We can change that behavior, or we can modify it. A lot of these kids feel hopeless, helpless. They don't see a path forward, and yet they're surrounded by role models of folks who've been through what they've been through and turned out okay. They need to be exposed more to successful individuals who've been through what they've been through to know that there are other pathways to success and to a positive lifestyle. And the other point that you made, I just want to emphasize, is that because things like post-traumatic stress disorder, traumatic experiences, it actually does produce drug abuse, changes in the brain. Just because there are changes in the brain doesn't mean the brain can't be modified forever. And what we know is that these early traumatic experiences, if we don't address them, can have impact long late into adulthood. But if we do something early on, we can actually produce changes in behavior, brain changes, and changes in terms of the outcomes that we can have in individuals. So the bad news is that these kinds of early traumatic events can have profound effects, even in terms of the brain, in terms of how you see the world. But we now have good evidence that if we strike early, we provide a positive environment, we provide positive role models, we give folks options, that you can produce meaningful changes in terms of where they end up.
And you know, the other aspect too, Dr. Lawson is an MD, PhD, well-published author, and I tell you, he has to fight for recognition, and God knows he does not get proper reimbursement for what he does. But look at how the rappers and all of them are idolized, okay? And again, I don't know about you, with Super Bowl last year, when they started rapping, I had no idea what that was. And again, but then I talked to a friend of mine. He said, you know, well, my granddaughter, I called my buddy down in New Orleans, Coach Griff. He said, yeah, my granddaughter was, hey, she was all into it. She's 6 and 7 years old. Yeah. So these children are being really connected. And we're now learning that the rappers are really have a message. And now that we have some Christian rappers, we have an avenue of getting the children in the right track. Mm-hmm. But again, I think this is a very, thank the caller in for that very profoundly important thing. Yeah. Our children are being brainwashed. They're idols. You know, they want Giovanni and Gucci and all that. Okay. But a distinguished scholar such as Dr. Bill Lawson, well published, you know, he has, thank God for you putting them on, Roach, because now your listening audience is being exposed to a world authority on depression. And as I said, now the depression in the child is different from depression in the adult. And I think I hope we realize that point. So
thank you.
Thank the listener for that absolutely important question. It's something, but we're now beginning to use. I'm now that I've been told what the rapper was saying during Super Bowl, he got some messages there. So I'm listening now. Right. I'm trying to listen more because these brothers have some messages, some stories to tell.
You also got to look at the medium too. With AI and with the other technology, good. Folks have become very good in figuring out how to get folks to attune to a special section of interest, and so that folks will come back to the same message over and over again. So that's why our parents got to make sure, find out what the kids are doing, listen to it. When they tell you this is old folks stuff, listen to it, see what's going on.
Yes.
Because they're the ones that's going to have to guide them to where they're going to go.
Yeah, discipline is love. And like my favorite philosopher, Marvin Gaye, said, only love can conquer hate.
There you go.
That's right.
That's my man, too.
That's the only way we're going to win. Love and respect.
You know, with all of the federal takeovers of Washington, they're talking about Chicago, and they did the same thing in California. And with the cutback of food stamps, the SNAP program, they shut down Job Corps. A lot of things, they're cutting that Medicare, Medicaid.
Yeah.
So this put more people on that hopeless, frustrated path that we anticipate suicides and violence is going to increase, because the less money have, the more, there's an old saying, they put us in projects on top of each other, and they say we act like crabs in the barrel. So I looked at it, I said, why they ask say we act like crabs? So I went and got a bushel of crabs, put them in a pot, put some hot sauce and Old Bay sauce on top of it.
And some beer. Put some beer.
And some beer in there. and a little scotch, and turn it up.
and that's precisely why we need to look within our own community in terms of the resources to direct them to our needs. We can't continue to depend entirely on the federal government, to the great white father, and so forth. We got to look in terms of our communities, in terms of, even if we don't have the money, we have the social experiences. We have the institutions that's taken us through a lot of things. We need to look at, learn that what's worked for us before, begin to build on it, and continue to use our existing institutions to be able to reinforce positive messages for our youth.
Hey, Bill, you sound like Sam Yet. You know, Sam said that the issue now, it's survival of Black Americans in these United States,
right.
which is our United States, which
yes.
we
That's
built.
Right.
Yes.
That's right.
We yes.
did.
Yes. You know, we need, we talk about a support system. We need to come up with maybe a creative way. We got young medical students at these universities, medical schools, and if they do the, I know they got to do a couple years of a residency, but if we can get the medical schools and the schools of social work to get involved to work in our communities to help to develop support mechanism or system, use the churches, whatever, because besides the killing, we're killing each other with the pistols, but now this is a silent killer. A lot of our kids are killing themselves, taking their life, because they don't see no life before them, and we have to give them that light. So is that a possibility, Dr. Lawson?
Absolutely, and some of us are doing exactly that at Howard University and at George Washington University. We're both working in terms of setting up programs to be able to provide positive models for our community. But for that to work, we got to have a good relationship between the academic community, the professional community, as well as our endogenous institutions. That's why the American Psychiatric Association and Black Psychiatrists of America, we've been working to make sure that the religious community provides a positive role model, but also begin to address some of these concerns as well. And also in Baltimore, there's barbershop programs, there are others. All of these are programs that's looking at our endogenous community, how they can link up and get the technology, the information, folks that seem to have made it to be able to provide positive role models for our youth.
And the National Medical
Recording
Association,
stopped.
You know, the National Medical Association in Chicago, one of our big programs was Walk a Mile with a Child. And again, this is a program that John Lewis marched with us in Atlanta when he was still alive. Uh-huh. And again, these programs that Dr. Loss has talked about, and at Howard University, we also have a peer, going to have a peer summit. So peers being able to really relate to patients. So, and Howard University also has a new dean that's really emphasizing lifestyle medicine changes so that people can manage their own care. So I think, Bill, I really agree with Bill. The more we do, and even the Urban League, we're working with the Urban League now, and the National Council of Negro Women. Okay. These kind of collaborations, I think, as Dr. Lawson has said, is what's going to make the difference.
And you also, know, Congresswoman Bonnie Watson Coleman has formed a coalition through the Congressional Black Caucus that's focusing on addressing the problem of suicide in our community. Her efforts have led to some legislative change, pushback to what we've already discussed about the cutbacks in terms of funding and the limitation of programs, which will be primarily affecting the local level. We're seeing what's happening at federal. It's going to be the local level that's really going to be impacted.
And Roach, you need to have Dr. Roger Mitchell, the president of the National Medical Association, talking about.
He's a good friend. We'll get him on. He's a good friend.
He's got the story.
Okay. You know, we just saw something that men aged 75 years old and older have the highest suicide rate among all age groups. I didn't know that 75 years old and older, these men are committing suicide at a high rate. Go ahead.
That's because they don't leave it. They don't live in leisure world. Because I'm 88 and I'm thriving. Okay,
right. That's actually disturbing, because in the old days, African Americans who lived beyond that age actually did better than their white counterparts.
And they still do, Bill. Black males over 80 live longer than their white counterparts.
Yeah, our colleague on Dr. Chapman is showing that. And the problem of drug abuse is now extending in terms of our elderly. So with some gains we've made in the past are being reversed by some of the newer problems, such as drug abuse.
Yes.
Yeah,
okay. I guess we're giving a lot of information out this morning to our listeners. We got a few minutes left. Dr. Lawson, would you like to, both of you, have you got a couple of minutes to get some closing comments and how they can get in touch with your phone number or email address for our listeners? Go ahead, Dr. Lawson. We got a couple of minutes.
Yes, I just want to emphasize the points that we've both been making. That is, be able to hug that child, listen, and also be able to do what we can to develop linkages to services in our communities. The more the communities involved, the better. And I would encourage you, we mentioned the 988 number. More information can be gotten in terms of my own website, www.reducing-disparities.com, www.reducing-disparities.com. I'm involved with what we find, telemedicine sites. Mine is MD Live, 800-400-6354, but there are others of us. We can't be everywhere, so we're doing what we can to use telemedicine and to outreach.
Thank you, Dr. Lawson. Dr. Fagot, you want to give some closing comments? Go ahead.
Well, thank you for, I'm so privileged to be in the same program with Dr. Lawson. And as we both said, depressive conditions of the kind seen in adult life are relatively uncommon in childhood, but they must become much more frequent during adolescence. Suicidal acts also become more frequent during adolescence, as does other kind of bipolar, PTSD, and manias. So again, we're not real sure with that adolescence. It's a tough call, but the more programs like this that you're having, Roach, the better we're going to be able to understand what's going on and protect against the depression, which leads to suicide. I just want to thank you for the privilege of sharing with you and your audience.
Thank you.
Is there a way to reach you, Dr. Fagot?
Yeah, 202-403-4039. If you have a child that you need to talk about, hey, give me a call.
Say that again. Repeat that.
202-403-4039. 4039. And Hillcrest Families, Hillcrest Family and Children's Center is still available, and they I help them out whenever I can. So that's a good resource right next to Banneker High School.
Right, beautiful.
Okay,
our guest has been Dr. William Lawson, psychiatrist in the Department of Health and Human Services, and then Dr. Walter Forgotten. Now, you know why I'm calling you Forgotten.
You know,
I didn't want to mess up nothing.
don't.
Thank you both for being on our show.
Yeah.
Thank you, because our topic has been Black Youth Suicide is on the Rise. And you both have shed a lot of light on it, and hopefully we can reach somebody and stop somebody from making that terrible decision. Thank you both, Dr. Lawson and Dr. Forgotten.
I got a call coming right now.
Thanks a lot. And this is you've been listening to Crossroads with Roach and Mertine, my beautiful wife, and engineer Mike and Mo. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. We'll see you next week on Crossroads. And remember, your inner voice is never wrong. Merry Christmas.
What's it do if you're approached by the police?
We deserve to be safe in our neighborhoods.
Follow these tips to assert your rights.
If you're being stopped, detained, or arrested, the best thing to say is nothing.
Stick to only these questions. Am I free to go? If stopped by law enforcement, try to leave the conversation as quickly and safely as possible.
Ask, am I free to go?
If yes, walk away calmly and quietly. Running away could give them pretext to detain you. Officers may try an incite a reaction. Ignore them. Knowing your rights is a great first step.
And asserting your rights is even better.
The Can I Kick It outdoor summer movie series presented by Shaolin Jazz is back. And it's coming to Southeast DC for the first time ever. Enjoy 3 nights of martial arts and action films, scored live with hip-hop, soul, and more, mixed by WPFW alum DJ Two Tone Jones. Saturday, September 20th at Skyland Town Center with the screening of Berry Gordy's The Last Dragon. Then on Saturday, October 25th, the series concludes with the screening of I'm Going to Get You Sucker at the Capitol Hill Boys Club Artist Gallery. Each event begins at 7 p.m. with a guest DJ set, followed by the movie at 8:30 p.m. Blankets and lawn chairs are welcome. For more details, visit shaolinjazz.com. shaolinjazz.com.
Still, it's a real good bet, the best is yet to come.
Hi, this is Robin Holden, the proprietor of Robin's Place. Every Friday evening from 7 until 10 p.m., Robin's Place is a mythical entertainment center consisting of 4 floors. On each floor of Robin's Place, we have rooms that are named after people who I think are icons in music, theater, and literature. We have the Nancy Wilson Room, the Joe Williams Room, the Gloria Lynn Room, the Frank Sinatra Room, the B.B. King Blues Room, the James Baldwin Library, just to name a few. Join me Friday nights from 7 until 10 p.m. as I take you on a musical journey you'll never forget. Robin's Place.
Come the day you fly, I'm gonna teach you to fly.
Are you ready to move, groove, and exercise with the WPFW family? WPFW's annual 5K Run Walk for Total Fitness happens Saturday, September 13th from 8 a.m. till 1 p.m. This fundraiser will be held at the Bladensburg Waterfront Park, 4601 Annapolis Road in Bladensburg, Maryland. In addition to a scenic 5K trail, fitness and wellness classes will be offered. Lively music to fuel your participation in the activities, along with water and healthy snacks, will be provided. Details are at WPFWFM.org or call 202-888-5484. There's something for everyone to enjoy. WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
The United Black Community presents the 21st annual
Love Supreme, a musical, poetic birthday tribute to another Ruth, John Coltrane, featuring the Nasa Abaday Quintet, Cindy Brown, Kenny Carroll, Nana Malaya, and more on Friday, September 19, 2025 at 7 p.m. at E-Life Restaurant, 9033 Central Avenue.